So peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to this week's Black Wallace Matter Town Hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be your host this evening. If this is your first time calling in, I want to run down a few ground rules for how we manage these calls. They usually last for about 2 hours, but if we have a really good one, we can extend it. So let me just say in advance, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us tonight. I hope you're feeling inspired and empowered because you are now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of discussing solutions to many of the problems we face in the Black community. So if you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and as a sign of solidarity. So during these calls, we don't like to discuss religion, we don't discuss the Black male and female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. The reason we do not discuss these topics is because they are all opinion-based, and no one is right and no one is wrong. We'll be here going around circles arguing all night. So I just want to tell you a little bit, if this is your first time, let me just tell you a little bit about what this organization is. So if you haven't watched the blueprint yet, Black Wallace Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in our Black community is if we roll up our sleeves and we do it ourselves using the power of the Black dollars we already have. Estimates say that we have $1.3 to $1.4 trillion in spending power. So if we were to just pool a fraction of those resources, practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. This organization is embarking on we were talking about being trendsetters. We're trying to pioneer a new trail within the Black community. So to give you an idea of what that is, when people start talking about the problems that we actually face in our community, a lot of it, as I speak to them at some length, they usually come to the conclusion that we need a change or a shift in the mindset, right? And I explain to them that I agree, but then I also offer the information that, our community was ravaged by the crack epidemic in the late 80s and the 90s or the mid 80s and the 90s. And that literally turned our people crazy. So we remember seeing crackheads walking in the street and things like that and literally saying these people are crazy. So what we are experiencing now is the after effects of that, right? It destroyed our community. We are in the rebuilding process right now as a people. The thing about it, though, is you have a lot of people who had to make a way out of no way. They basically had to, get it how they live. And so you can't really tell people that are that strong-willed, that are that self-made, you can't really tell them what to do. It's like that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. That is where we currently are with our people. So some of the things that some of us older people may understand, and some of us who may be morally grounded, right, because we had a better upbringing, our home environment or whatever it is, we see some of the things that are going on and we're compelled to do something. Other people within our community, they don't see anything wrong with that. And so trying to correct their ways or telling them that they need to think a certain way or change their mentality, especially in mass, that is something that is just not going to be successful. So if you go back in history and think about when dynamic speakers such as Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, Farrakhan and whoever else, when they talk to our people, they are not convincing the mass with their common sense. That is a strategy that does not work. What you have to do, or what I have come to understand, the way how our opposition has got us in this state, thinking the way that we do, they have shaped and molded us. They molded us. They crafted us. They've done mental jujitsu to us, and it started from young, and it started when there was basically, you know, we didn't have a way of life. We forgot our culture, our language, and all these other things. And then they put something else in there. We can't do that to adults, but we can shape and mold the minds of the children, right? If we shape and mold the minds of our children, then they will have a different outlook in terms of what it means to be black and the behavior and the cultural norms of what it means to be black. And if we take that responsibility, we can put all the positive things in there and none of the negative things that we currently experience as a people. So when I mention that to folks, they say, yes, that is a good idea. And so then they say, how? How do we do that? And so I explain to them, you know, what the plan with the blueprint of this organization is. So the vehicle that we will use to educate these children, we call them community resource centers. So I know growing up, you know, like during the 90s and, you know, late 80s and 90s, when crack was ravaging my community, my neighborhood, I would walk out my front door and I would have nothing to do. The only options would be to get in trouble or go play basketball or something like that. There were no other opportunities. There was nothing to take my strength and my energy and shape it and mold it and turn me into a productive person. And so we want to put these community resource centers in these neighborhoods or in these communities where they are desperately needed. And we want to provide these opportunities to these young men and women and also these children. That's the overall goal of this organization. That is the only way that we are going to be able to make a definite impact on the current path that black America, or just, I mean, black people all over the world, actually, because this is not just in America. This is the only way we're going to make a definite change. Every other way has never worked for us, right? The community resource centers, it's going to be expensive. Right, because you're talking about something like a school. We're talking about something like a community college, something with like a campus, something where people could go in and learn trades, learn computer programming. We just recently discovered we're going to have to start really embracing basic general education, helping people get GEDs and tutoring and things like that. These things are going to require a lot of investment, a lot of money. And so the only way that I know to get a sustainable source of money that we can control is through the vehicle of business, right? Now, a lot of black folks I speak to, I've spoken to thousands, literally thousands, and they're, you know, everyone is hopped up on this idea of starting business, getting into business, but usually the reason why they want to do that is because they personally want to get rich. Or they personally want to build wealth. That's what they heard. They heard, you know, you build wealth through a business. When I speak to most, they don't really understand how like the business would work in order to be something, you know, to be successful. And then they don't understand that a business the size that they, you know, a large business that they would need to produce the type of wealth that they're talking about, you know, it's going to take some time. It's definitely going to take an experienced hand at the steering wheel, and it's going to take a bit of luck, you know. So when I say that, you know, they kind of look at me as if I'm raining on their parade, but I'm speaking from experience, right? So this is not like, you know, I'm not talking to them from theory. I'm talking about from actually building a business and failing at businesses, being successful at other businesses. But what we can do as a collective, we can build businesses and wealth as a collective because we can spread the risk. We can spread the workload as a people, right? Because no one person is strong enough, has enough resources to really take on the challenge that we have here with trying to fix the problems in the black community. And so in regards to the business aspect to support our community resource centers, we want to pool our resources. We want to pool those resources and put them to work in large businesses that can employ our brothers and sisters and at the same time generate a large enough profit margin so that we can support these community resource centers. Another component of that is we need political and legal protection, but I'm not even going to get into that now. I just want to focus on the business aspect. I mean, I want to focus on pooling our resources together to create businesses that will support the communities that support it. Had a sister call me today from Detroit, and we were talking, and like I kind of like had an epiphany. She came to me and she said, "Hey, I had an idea. I looked at everything that Black Wallets Matter is about. I have a similar idea. I want to see how we could collaborate." And what her challenge was is aggregating the people and, you know, pooling their money and then putting it into a system where they could use it to actually invest in a business and start helping their community. And one of the challenges that we have is, like, so we have trust issues, we have transparency issues, we have the investment aspect, right? So we have to do some education in regards to the people that are investing, because, you know, some people, they really think, hey, you know, here's, you know, my $1,000, when do I get back my $2,000? Like, actual business that has expenses, overhead, operations, it usually doesn't work like that, right? And so there was that hurdle, because when I was explaining it to her, she identified that, yep, that was something else. The other thing is actually finding and recruiting and getting in those few brothers and sisters who will understand what it takes to actually build something. And as I was speaking to her, I said, you know what, I told her, I said, frankly, my organization, the brothers and sisters that stand with me, we are about building a legacy. We are about building something for the future. And we need a system where people have to understand that they're making an investment for their children and their grandchildren. But whatever that system is, that is what Black Wallets Matter is dedicated to building. We want it where when people come to us from Plano, Texas, and say, hey, we have a group of brothers and sisters that we want to get together and we're trying to do something, but we don't know how, we want to give them our blueprint. Even if they don't take part of our organization, we want to give them the blueprint. We want to give them all the operational problems. I mean, we want to give them solutions to all of the operational problems that they will have. This organization, the members of this organization, we work hand in hand a lot, especially as of lately. We've been doing a lot of personal bonding and things like that. Last year, we found that one of the biggest problems that, you know, most of our people have is just being able to work together, right? So, you know, you would think, okay, cool, yep, I want to invest in a business. I want to grow a business. You want to do that. But it's like, well, how do we actually interface with one another? If you really go back and think about it, most Black folks, we don't have that experience outside of church. We don't know how to do those things like on a casual basis. We found that we're working. So this organization right now, we're working on building interpersonal relationships, interpersonal bonds, so that we can be able to put our money together in a pot and then do something else, because that's that trust. That's that trust factor that's going to be needed. You need to know who you're investing with, or who you're building with, who you're working with. Sometimes you have to come to the understanding that, hey, you know what? You believe one thing, I believe something else, but hey, we both believe that, you know, our brothers and sisters need better. We both need that we need to march, you know, that we need to create a better future or leave something for the legacy. Sometimes that's all they need. Let's just put our differences aside. And that's what we've been focused on. And we've had those challenges. And I'm glad to say that we're experiencing the hiccups and the bumps and bruises, but we're documenting everything because we want to roll this out to any organization that wants to get together. Any organization that says, you know what, we have a small group here, but we just don't know how to do it. Like, here, take a look. So what I want to say to you, brothers and sisters, is if this sounds like something that you're interested in building, this system that we're talking about, join in an organization of brothers and sisters who are trying to discover what it is, all the components and all the parts that it's going to take to actually build something for our brothers and sisters, then we want to invite you to join us. So as I said, we are a membership. We are a member organization, and we have membership dues. So membership dues are $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold level and $50 at the platinum level. What we've engineered or what we've worked out with our partner, with our nonprofit organization, your membership dues can be made tax deductible, right? But we are just trying to get enough revenue so that we can work out all the kinks to this organization. Sister Shauna and I, we were looking at some of the other legal things, in the past couple of days. Well, actually today, we have legal hurdles, right? Because we have to be protected. We're a black organization. We do understand how we can be targeted and dismantled, you know, on technicalities, financially, right? So we got to make sure that we can keep the lights on, keep the doors open. We need the membership to grow. We have goals for this organization. We have a goal for 2,000 founding members to help us reach our next financial goal. Socially, right? When we get in brothers and sisters who are like-minded, and we have a definition of what like-minded means, when we get in brothers and sisters who are like-minded, that is going to help all of us grow as a collective, right? Because this organization is not going to be for everyone. Perfect example, we just had two people leave the call right now. This is just the beginning of the call. So this is just not for everyone. And as we've been working together as an organization, we realize that, and we're very, very comfortable about that because we know exactly who we're looking for. Or at least we're getting closer. We're getting really, really closer to the bullseye. We're very happy about that. And we will take our time getting to what we have to do because we feel making the investment in our people is worth it to us. So with that said, I am going to open up the call. I'm going to put it in Q&A mode. And so what I want to, you know, so I want a few people, I want to ask this question, and I would like people to weigh in on this. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think the black family is to the development of our youth and the black community and the future of the black community, right? So that's the first question that I want to ask. Press star 6, you know, weigh in on this. I want to get feedback from, I want to get feedback from our brothers and sisters. All right. Brother Leonard.
How you doing, Brother Lou? And how are all the brothers and sisters? Peace, brother. How are all the brothers and sisters that are on the call? It's almost like the million-dollar question, mm-hmm. but it's also the duh question, so to speak. Right. Are you serious that you're asking that? But because of where we are collectively, you have to ask such a question. It is 150%, whereas most times if you work for a company, they say, well, you got to give 100%. You hear people say you got to give 135%, and that's just the company. We're talking about the salvation of the black community in the coming years, and I'm already at 2,065 myself personally. So we have to be at 200%. So on a scale of 1 to 10, it's 20. Because if we don't start to really understand that, how can our young queens know how to take care of the kings? How are our young prince become a king to take care of our queens? See, it's almost like chess. If you look at chess, the most important person in the game is the king, but he can only move one spot. Right. The queen is the most powerful player on the board, okay? Now, granted, it may be a European concept, but this is the world we live in. And basically, they're telling you how important that your queen is. So if you don't take care of the queen, okay, there is no future. And everybody knows that the mother is the foundation of any successful family. But you do have to have a king, because it's not called queendom, it's called kingdom. So the thing that we're trying to work on, Black Wallets Matter, that's what's going to happen in the years to come, just based on the resource centers, because it will start to build a collective among all black families. But to answer your question, because I know other people are probably in the queue, it's 20. You said 1 to 10. For me, yeah, it's 20.
Okay, and so I want to follow up with, well, so how well do you think we're doing in regards to prioritizing a black family and, you know, taking care of that responsibility, like, as a collective? Like, how well do you think? So you know it's important, but how well do you think we're performing? How would you grade our performance in that area?
Well,
as a collective, as a collective,
we're not doing well. Okay, right. You said a one. We're doing
on a one to ten. Yeah, on a 1 to 10. Yeah.
1 to 10, we're at 1, and that's just because I feel so strongly about our people and how great.
Right.
And like I said, coming up during the civil rights movement, the two family household where they had two parents, it was 75%, I believe, if not more. I think it was even higher. Now we're down to 25%, and the very reason why we have this organization, people like you and myself and the other callers and the members, realize we're in a dire straits right now. We're in a crisis. And it's unfortunate that people like yourself and the people that are members see that. We need to have more people seeing that. We need to have 75% of the black population to recognize that. So I think that we're not doing well. And part of that even goes to, I think I read something to you in the members meeting about Claude Anderson. It doesn't make sense for us to continue to have babies and send our children to go to other neighborhoods to ask for a job. And the word that he used is criminal. Well, he's not talking to the Asian people, and he's not talking to the Jews. He's talking to us. So we have a great opportunity. But again, with the resource center, and just like you said before, when we start pushing the young males that may not have their fathers in their life, we become surrogate fathers, and we need to understand that role. Just because what's good for another culture right now, because we're so far behind.
Your phone is breaking up, brother. Your phone is breaking up. I can't.
Can you hear me now?
Yep,
can you hear me
now? Yep, there you go.
Sorry. Okay. I had to move another spot of the house. So many of us black men are going to have to become surrogate fathers, because we do have to help these young males, because at the end of the day, they still have to be head of the household. It can't be the same thing where our black queens are the ones that are head of the household, okay? And if nothing else, there needs to be two parents, because the little princess needs it, and so does the prince. So as I stated before, we're not doing too good, to answer your question, and it's scary where we are right now.
You kind of answered my follow up question as well, so I won't call on you for the follow up question.
Okay, good.
All right, thank you, brother. All right, Sister Mai. Hello, sister.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
All right. Yes, I can. So, sister, so the question is, on a scale of 1 to 10. How important do you think the black family is to the development of our youth and the future of the black community?
I did not want to echo Leonard and say 20, but I think it's extremely important. 20, it's awesome.
21? You want to say 21?
There you go, 21. 22,
okay,
actually.
Cool.
That's my favorite number.
Okay, cool, 22. All right. Okay, and how well and how would you rate us in regards to our performance in realizing that and then living that out?
I'd say probably, I'd give us a 1.5.
1.5? Okay, so we're, all right, cool. No, that's cool. All right, and so then now, and then the follow-up question that I was going to ask the brother was, so if, you know, if an individual family can't nurture and shape and mold their children or mold their household, do you think it should be the responsibility of the collective to take that responsibility and do that because it reflects on us all? Or do you even feel that these things reflect on us all?
I absolutely think that they reflect on us all, and I would say 90% feel like we should try and pick up the slack, or pick up the slack, not try. But there's 10% that says, you know, not everybody.
I'm asking you. What is your opinion?
What I was going to say, I know. I wasn't going to talk about other people's opinion. What I was going to say is,
hello? Oh, she's, her phone hung up. All right, so she'll call back in. Brother Leon. So, Brother Leon.
Yeah, Brother Blue. All right.
So the first question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think the black family is to the development of our youth and the future of the black community?
Well, my answer to that, like, I'd have to just go with the other brothers, it's a 20, because basically it's like it's twofold, okay? When you have a family, okay, you got two people, okay, or a group of people who are producing a product that's going to help do the same thing over again. So I said a 20.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On that same scale, 1 to 10, how well would you say we're performing, you know, when it comes to that responsibility as a collector?
Okay. That right there, that's a hard one. I'd have to go with, like, I'm at the low number, but now I'm just looking at real numbers. I'd say, like, right now, it'll be under the same ratio that we have brothers that's in prison, okay, right now, okay. Like I say, this is that type of number. Because see, we're losing, you know, brothers that can produce brothers and sisters, okay. So it'd have to be the same ratio. Okay, give you an example. Okay, when we had slavery, you had so many slaves, right? Well, the number of brothers that's in prison right now has came to that same number pretty much. So I have to say, you know, you go with that type of equation, man. Like, it's like, you know, one, two, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just nice. Yeah.
All right. And do you personally feel that if a black family cannot shape and mold, have, you know, take care of that, do you think that the community as a whole should accept that responsibility for shaping and molding that child because their actions would reflect on us all?
Yes, I do. Personally, I do. I believe that personally. I have reason for believing that, but an answer to the question is yes, I believe that. Mm-hmm. But now that I come back with saying that and being kind of like a realist, I'd ask myself, well, are we qualified to do that, okay? Well, to answer the question,
that's
yes.
That's a good question, too.
Okay. So my answer to the question is yes, but I come back with the other question, are we qualified? And now that's the key question there. When I said, are we qualified to do that? Okay, some of us are. And what we're doing with Black Wallet Matters, we're actually, say, bringing that number up of who's qualified to what? First, to determine what black is. And once you know what that is, then you can help other people become that. And that's going to start in your family.
Right. All right, cool. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. That was a real good question, too. Are we qualified? Okay,
yes, sir.
Sister Maya is back in the queue. Yeah. See you, Sister Rhonda. That's Sister Maya.
Okay, so I was saying 90%, yes, I think that we should, or it's our responsibility to help, as we are the village, and I do believe it takes a village to raise a child. The other 10%, and why I'm hesitant is, I was going to say, not everyone, honestly, I feel deserves to be helped in that way where we're taking up the slack for them because they put themselves in that situation and don't want to get out. Like, there's just some people that really don't want help, or they want help, but they don't want to help themselves at all. And they will, their priorities are so screwed up that it's like they should actually have to suffer the consequences of their own actions. And if we just completely bail them out, we're going to take care of their kids for them, and they just keep having these babies knowing they can't support them because they know somebody else is going to take care of them, and they're just going to get what they can get out of it, but they don't want to really be parents or be responsible for those kids. I don't think we should help those kind of people.
I was thinking about that. I don't know why that popped into my head this morning. So I was thinking about, like, welfare. And I was like, yeah, we should have welfare, but I think it should have, like, a directive. It should be, like, you should have welfare, and then the goal should be, you know, helping you or supporting you until you're able to do X, Y, Z. You know, but in terms of, you know, kids, you know, people having kids and what you can and can't say and do, that's a good intriguing question. That's a good question. All right. Good. Well, okay. Something to think about. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sister Rhonda.
Good evening, everyone.
Peace.
All
right. So let me take it from the top.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think the Black family is to the development of our youth and the future of the Black community?
I want to say 15.
Okay. Oh, well, you're not funny. I'm sorry, because they have me thinking the scale is 20. Okay, so you're saying 15, so it's definitely all the way. All right, cool. Got it.
Right.
And now, on that same scale, how well would you say we're doing?
We are. If I said this, don't think I'm crazy, but I would say zero. And the reason why I say a negative, I'd say zero, and I know you said one to ten, but zero because we can't seem to get the like-minded people together. We got them out there. But it's for some reason that they want to do it their way. They don't want to come together. So I just say zero. It's difficult, especially with our demographics. It's very difficult.
You know that's. I mean, so here's why I believe we're so independent, right? We don't come together. We don't see the benefit. But we have never experienced the benefit of being in a collective. I think that's what it is. I think once we, so let's just take this organization. So as I said at the beginning, right, you know, I'm speaking to the sister from Detroit earlier. What she, you know, she was like, hey, I'm trying to do this, but it's hard to do this, and I want to do this. And I'm like, sister, we already been down that road. Here's a little information I can share with you. Here's some stuff that we've learned, you know, blah, blah, blah. What I realized is that we have to build it. Those of us who are in it, we will feel it. We will experience it, right? And then those who are on the outside, they will see it. And that will say, aha. That's why they need to be able to do something, right? But see, I'm also thinking about like what is the value that our people would see, right? So it really can't be something as complicated as, okay, everyone has an individual business, because individual businesses are not all guaranteed to succeed, and not everyone actually wants to run a business. You know, everyone that would be like-minded, right? So it would have to be some other kind of benefit, and we need to figure that out. And so, I mean, that's something for, like, the members call. But that's definitely something that needs to be
done. I agree. Because what happens is that you have to, well, I think for us as a collective, we have to emulate what we're doing. We just can't tell us, oh, you need to go across that street and go now because the car is coming. You got to take that person by the hand. Come on, we got to run because the car is coming. We may get hit. We have to show the person. We cannot do, we can't talk it. We got to show it.
Right. All right. And now the final question. And so now if an individual family, if an individual family can't nurture and shape their children, do you think that the collective, the black community as a collective, should take on that responsibility?
I don't think so, Brother Luke, only because, I would like to say yes, but the reason why I'm saying no is because of the times we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
See, and we would have to do a lot of, we have to do a lot of investigative thing because we have a lot of problems within our community. We have people with bad characters. I don't want to get into, you know, any personal thing, but I'm not going to trust my, if I have small children, I'm just not going to trust you with my child. Like when we was coming up, Mr. John was sitting in that window and he didn't bother us, but he kept a check on us. Oh, I'm going to tell your mother, I know your father, what time he get home for work, you know, such and such. But we don't have that, so I think we should not be at that point where we put our children in other people's hands just yet. Maybe we can grow to that point, but to start out putting, saying no to community, because our community is fractured.
No, I know, but I'm saying if the, so let's just say if, and I wasn't saying your family specifically, I'm just saying if we identify those families that can't, you know, that can't nurture and shape their children properly, can't accept the responsibility or are not faring well with the responsibility in their household. You know, should we create some kind of entity or something like that, some cultural right, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Okay, I can buy that then, and it won't cost a lot neither. I can buy that one. Mm-hmm.
All right, then, cool. I'm not even going to hit you with, are we qualified yet? But thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Brother Greg. Peace, brother.
Peace, brother.
All right. So
can you hear me?
So Yes, I can.
Listen, you know, I am so, my spirit is so overjoyed at some of the questions and answers that I'll be getting in. You know, my spirit just tell me about trust. You know what I mean? That means because your question is simple. It's simple. It takes me back to, you know, can a community raise a child? Or, you know, do
more or less.
Can you trust? There's no trust with us, man. I'm telling you, man. There's no trust with us. It hurts my heart because that is what, for 400 years, they broke us down. They broke that trust down. You know, we can't trust each other, man. We just cannot trust each other. And it keeps us so divided, man. You know, it keeps us from helping our children, okay? Because, see, I see that what they have done to us is generational, okay? And it's still, you know, I looked at some stuff was going on about the Ku Klux Klan and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they just keep teaching their people to hate us. But we can't teach our people to love us. Okay? And we the one. I mean, you can look at the Chinese or any other race, brother. They are not as divided as we are. The chemical has not worked on them like it has worked on us. To make a long story short, you know, I'm retired now, and my business has always been tour guide. I was, you know, driving tour buses. I had a company, had 16 buses. We
drove Chinese people. They came to us, all the Asian people. And don't get them mixed up. They don't like for you to get them mixed up. All right, if they are Chinese, they don't want you calling them Taiwanese or Japanese. Okay? They into their own as
I was gonna say that on that side of the world, they've been over there fighting amongst themselves like crazy. The Japanese, the Koreans, the Chinese,
Don't get the me. You know, and it's always me. It's Japanese, Vietnamese, Taiwanese, you know what I mean? Thailandese. Don't get them mixed up. But we, you know, I'm just talking about my people, man. My heart breaks, brother. My heart breaks that we cannot come together. And going back to my story, I had a group of Japanese in Canada. And I was loading the bus one morning. And I'm only, I've never weighed more than 135 pounds, but I could drive a bus like with the back of my hand. And I could load one with Japanese or Chinese luggage that weighed more than them. Okay. And I was loading one morning, and this Chinese, old Chinese guy was looking at me. And I got, it was early one morning, it was hot and everything, and I was kind of frustrated. And I looked around and I seen him, so I kind of like, what are you looking at? You know, I got real angry. What are you looking at? So he said, this is what he said to me, and I'll never forget it. He said, no, you people, if could ever unite, rule the world. These are the words he said to me now. And I was pissed off at him because he was looking at me, and, you know, and I'm loading the bus, but he gave me some knowledge that I would never forget in my life, okay? But we can never – why can't we get this across to our people, man? Do you know what we were before slavery? People don't look at their education, man. Look where you came from, man. Look who you are. And we just Africans in the diaspora. That's all we are. You ain't no African-American. You just an African that don't live in Africa. But your kids, your children's kids, your grandkids, they depend on what we do right now. Okay? They depend on this kind of engagement. Okay? This brother with his organization and I've heard a lot of other people that are truly, truly committed. I mean, I'm 65 years old. I don't care what you do to me. You know, I'm paying my bills, bro. You know what I'm saying? I don't need nobody, okay? Because I'm over the hump. But I am concerned about my people. And that's what we need to do. I mean, that's what we need more of. We need more of our people who are concerned about our people. I don't care what, you know, where you from, bro. I don't care where you live at or whatever. It's about you being committed to somebody other than you, okay, to your children, to your children's children. And we need more of that, man. And yes, it takes a community to raise a child. And we need to raise more than just a child. We need a whole bunch of stuff going on there. I'm done.
Well, I mean, so what you said, you know, about especially like Chinese, Japanese, and all these different, you know, people, they recognize the strength that we have and we don't. All other kinds of people are able to recognize our strength, which is kind of the reason why, you know, which is the reason why we're targeted and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like they know a secret that we don't know.
Ooh.
And I'm actually curious, like, because as you're saying this, you know, I
it is not a secret, brother. My brother, it's not a secret.
What is it? Like, is it just the numbers? Like, I mean, it can't just be our numbers, right? So it's like, what is the secret? Like, what is it? What is the secret power, or what is it that others would fear? So last year there was a sister. She came on and she was like, you got to understand, they're fearing for their very existence. Because when you have a black man and a black woman and, you know, they come together, what happens is they have a baby and that baby is no longer white. And so they're fearing for their existence.
Huh? They can't stop that part. That part can't stop it.
No, right. But the sister was saying that right there is the underlying motivation for every other thing that they do.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying something like that, and I was like,
survival.
I was like,
it's
really?
Survival.
Right.
Brother.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what do you think? So what is it that you think that they are seeing in us that we're not seeing, you know, in ourselves? I've only lived in America, so I can only think from this society's perspective, right? And so this society is based on business and economics and politics. Those are the only things that I can think of. But I don't know everything. So what do you think?
Brother Lou, here's what I'm saying, brother. I've been around the world. I served for 6 years in the Navy, okay, and I've been around the world twice. But what I'm trying to say is this: we are no different from any other race on the human race, except for the fact that we are the originators, okay? And they know that better than we do, okay? They know that. I mean, that's why everybody, throughout, you know, let me go all the way back, man. You can go all the way back before slavery. They always try to keep us from knowing us, okay? Because once you know who you are, you know, nothing can hurt you, man. Nothing can hurt you. Death, till death do us part. Death is can't even hurt you. Can't even hurt us. But what I'm saying is, they have a generational thing going on. I get kind of frustrated because we BSing too much. You know, our race is BSing, bro.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. What I'm curious, and I guess I'll just pose this to the floor. I'll just bring this to the floor. So Brother Leonard wants to create this documentary where we show our people what it looks like if we don't get it together. I'm curious to see, like, if we did know ourselves, if we did, I know it would be, right?
No,
it's kind of like the galvanized folks and, you know, refer them into action.
I can help him with that.
But now I'm curious to know, let's just say if we did know who we were and if we did know, like, what would that be? Like, because if we don't, because that's a good question. It's like, all right, so even if we did have it together, what would it look like if we had it together? That's what I'm curious to see. Now we got a couple of people in there. That's good. I hope they have some answers for me. Because I'm seriously, let's say if we were true, let's say if we knew our identity, if we knew what country from Africa we came from, we knew our original tongue, our original religion, our original culture, right? We knew all of that. Like, what would that look like? Because we probably wouldn't be here. We would probably be in Africa. And if you look at what's going on in Africa, it's not that much. It's not better than what we got going on over here.
But can I say one thing before you let it go? I'm going to say one thing, then I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let this go. Look, we are Africa, okay? Africa is everywhere, bro. You know, you don't have to go back to the motherland. They can't tell you to go back home or nothing. None of this. This is us. The world is us, man. Let me tell you something. The power lies in our communities. What we've been talking about, this is, you know, simple. Really, it's really simple but complicated because they got the generations, man. You know, you can turn on the news, man. They got the kids going in shooting up their houses. There ain't black people doing that crap. You know, but they don't want to give us our due, and they're not going to give us our due, bro. The colonizers, the whoever you want to call them, the powers to be or whatever, they're not going to give us our due. They're not going to tell us how it's done, because then they know it's over, okay? And it's all going to be over sooner or later, because you know I understand a lot more, and it's all going to be over. You know, they cannot deny us. We cannot be denied. All we can do is be delayed, okay, by us not being united and not coming together, we're going to be delayed, okay? The situation is going to be delayed. And I don't know how long it's going to be. I don't really care because I'm 65. I know I ain't got but 220, whatever. But I'm concerned about my kids and my grandkids and my great-grandkids. I'm concerned about my people. So that's where my energy, my heart lies. But I'm not going to keep, tripping over my feet.
No, I get it. I get it. We got a few more people jumped in the queue now, too. Thank you, brother, for weighing in. Thank you, brother.
Okay, bro. Bye.
Okay, Brother Chris, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing? Good evening. I just had to jump in behind the brother before me. I love conversations like this. I just wanted to maybe add maybe another piece of the puzzle or what you were talking about. You know, maybe they know a secret that we don't. There may be more truth to that than you even believe or even think, because when you look at the history, I don't care if you're studying anthropology, ancient civilizations, what have you, the further back you go, the more you start to realize, yes, it's true, Africa's everywhere. We're not relegated to one continent. Like, I've seen forensic shows that looked at DNA in Japan and DNA in China, where the further back they trace their DNA, the darker they get, where there are indigenous islands off the coast of Japan where there are Japanese people that look just as black as Denzel Washington, kinky hair and the whole nine. The only difference you can discern is their skin color. They look Japanese, but they're dark as we are. The same thing when you look at the ancient Greeks. You know, we have to understand that so many things historically have been taken from us, flipped a little bit, and then presented as it coming from the other. And we created so many of those secrets that are now used to gain power and authority. Those things generated from us, everything generated from the cradle of Africa. You can look at the research now and see how geneticists understand that there's only one group of pure Homo sapiens on this planet. I don't know if you knew that.
I'm familiar with I'm familiar with Rambolophithecus, Australopithecus, you know, Lucy, whatever.
That's right.
I'm familiar with all of that. I'm familiar with old Vicord. I'm familiar with all of that. I'm just saying in terms of we have that information, right? So that information is not hidden from us. We have that. How is that like applicable? How is it usable? Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like,
I'll tell you how. I'll tell you what I suppose. This is part of something I'm working on in my project, which is why I was provoked. It ties, the reason why I bring up genetics and stuff like that is that we inherently have the dominant gene. Okay?
Right.
That's a fact. It will give you what we're allowed to know, to peek at, is the fact that it gives us superior physiques. We're allowed to know that. Okay? But it stops there, okay? You go, we're looking at the Olympics. I was watching footage from the Olympics the other day. They had sprinters going. There was like 20 people sprinting. The top 14 of them crossed the finish line, were all black. And then like 40 minutes later, everybody else crossed the finish line. Football, baseball, things with hand-eye coordination, physical strength, endurance, speed, things of this nature, we're allowed to fulfill our potential physically in such a way that it harnesses more power for them. They're the owners. They're the the people who write the checks and things like that. But you have to stop and think, why are we buying this kind of unspoken myth that our excellence is only physical, when we know historically how many times and in how many ways knowledge has been stolen from us? Knowledge, we can look historically and look at how institutionalized robbing us of knowledge has been. There was a time not very long ago where you could be killed for just learning how to read. Why is that? We're allowed to see that we're physically excellent. And we all know, we've all grown up with mothers, fathers, aunts and uncles that have always told us, hey, keep your nose to the grinding stone, put in work, because you have to be twice as good to get half the credit. That is a backdoor hint about our excellence. It's a backdoor, around the way hint, or everybody can have a story where they see other people, they're working, but they're still deferring to you because you have these brilliant ideas. You have this incredible work ethic. Now, they've been trying to drive that out of our society, but we're still here. Look at what they did to the Native Americans. We're still here. We have 40, how many generations in this country as a minority? We're still here. We're still here, and we're still creating. We're still innovating. Even though they knock our castles down, our bricks down, we rebuild every single time. We have mental complexes, yes. You can't be fighting an uphill battle that we're fighting and not have mental complexes. That's why my answer to that is, anything that we do as a people, trying to come together, trying to network, all this other stuff. I hear brothers on sisters on the phone today on this very conference call talking about how we can't trust each other. There is no trust. That's not a mistake. But the answer to that is not to just try to get together again. The answer is to address the mental issues through education. We need to put together programs, which is what I'm doing technically. We need to put together programs to open each other's eyes and hip each other to this game that's been run on us, to feed that mental hole that has been indoctrinated into us. Then we can connect our intellectual excellence with our physical excellence. There is no divide except for the illusion that we've been programmed to have from the efforts of millions of people over centuries.
Okay. I mean, you said a lot, and every single thing was 100% accurate. We got a few people in the queue, but because I really want to ask you, I'm like, okay, cool. I hear we all know all of that. My question is why? My question is why? Why? I mean, to me, the survival, the thing that the sister said a few months ago about, hey, you know, their survival depends on it, that makes absolute sense to me. But I'm just saying, like, sure. what we're experiencing now, some of the things that's just baked into the system. I understand that a lot of things are just the way how stuff is done. But it's like, but if we were to know what that true secret is, if we would know what our true power, whatever that is, like, first of all, what is that true power? And then what would it look like? What would the world look like? What would, you know.
Well, maybe, okay, I'll address that real quick, and I want to actually bring up a resource. I want to bring resources to the table every time I talk on this conference now. So I have a resource I would like us to just look at. It's in its baby stages. I just learned about it on XM Radio. I want to run it by you. But to answer that question of maybe what the why is, there could be kind of like maybe there's two different directions that could go in. The why could be either based in fear, or the why could either be grounded in greed. What I mean by that is, maybe back in the day, when both our physiques, our physical excellence, and our mental, spiritual, psychological excellence were as one, maybe we were abusive with it. Maybe we were abusive with it. I know that I, in my 43 years on this planet, I know I can't trust almost any history I'm taught in this nation, because as soon as I do a ton of digging, I understand it to be chock full of propaganda. So I know the truth is far from what we've always been taught. So I really am fighting to uncover the true history of not only the United States, because we don't know that technically in mainstream education, but the history of the world. And it's possible that when we had it all together, we were abusive. And then the world was like, yo, we got to dismantle this. We can't let this happen again.
Right. That's something to think about. Okay. All right. Yeah, because that's kind of sort of like how they kind of operate like that at all costs right now anyway. So, we got a few people in the queue. I can circle back to you. I can circle
right,
back
no
to
problem.
You
and
then we can do that. All right, thank you, brother. Brother Leonard.
Yeah, let me tell you that you really struck a nerve with many of us these questions, and I think it's healthy. And hopefully this is what you were looking for as the end result. But I want to mention a couple of things that some other callers had said, and because I studied the Asian culture, you're right in what you said, and they're part of the world. They're fighting among themselves, but their cultures are still similar. See, every Asian person eat rice. Every Asian people know what chopsticks are. Regardless if they're Taiwanese, Korean, Japanese, they know what chopsticks are, and they know what rice is. But in where I used to work in Southern California, it was called Puente Hills. And they have all of the Asians working in that area, and they cohabitate, and they still do their business in the same area, and there's no friction. Because they know they're not in their part of the country. What they're all about is business. But now let's talk about the Armenians.
Real quick, right? So I believe that there is a cultural way for Asians to do business then. It is
right.
A cultural way for them to come with one another, shake hands. Right. All right, So I just was studying all this stuff about like China. So I think it was Brother Greg, he was gonna get into it. He was like, nah, I don't wanna, you know, start getting into, you know, talking about it's all gonna come down. But, you know, America is about to lose its number one position as, you know, the largest market and, you know, world power and blah blah blah. And it's basically, and they're gonna lose it to China. And so I was like sitting back, not sitting back. I was researching how could China, the underdog, come up and beat back America. And I was thinking about it because I'm trying to look at tactics and strategies for us. How can we as underdogs, like that's all I do in regards like to this organization. I study how underdogs beat, you know, David beat Goliath. That's all I do. Because I'm trying to figure out what types of moves that we need to make as a people. Because I have 100% belief in us that we can do it. It's just that we need the strategies. We need to do that. What I realized, though, is that China was a civilization. Other people were, like, just living. Other people had, you know, cultures. Not even cultures. They were just living. China had a civilization built on the cultures that their belief in Buddha, Confucius, that philosopher, he gave them like a way to live, a way to be. The hierarchy was China, all right, and then China went, so did all those other Asian countries. You know, just to let you know, China had, they don't have a word for individual. China is the nation first, then the family in support of the nation. That's it. There's no individual. When they, the way they look at us as our individualism, they're saying there goes Americans have a love for privacy or something, or a love for loneliness. That's what they call our privacy. They say they have a love for loneliness. I'm thinking about that because I'm saying, as the brother alluded to, we were on that side of the world when this was the supercontinent, when it was Pangea or whatever. We went all over the place. But I'm wondering if our true culture is more in alignment with that, because we do have that it takes a village, and that's what the China thing is. I believe that because we're here in America trying to live with their culture, their rules, this European way of thinking, I think that's throwing us off. Because that's what threw China off. When the Europeans came, they saw all the stuff China had, but China was self-sufficient. And in China was like, we don't want to do trade with you. But what happened is they brought them opium. They brought the freaking opium over there. And look, this is what the Europeans do. They stay trying to get people hooked on dope. They've been doing it. They've been doing this for years. They did this to China hundreds of years ago. Got China hooked on dope, start coming in, and then basically what they did was China said, all right, no more dope in our, selling drugs on our shores. And they confiscated the stuff, and I think they even killed, like, the guy. And then Britain sent over, like, some warships and whatever, and basically took over the country. China was like, they call it the shame. They were shamed for 100 years. But they still was able to rebuild because they have a culture, or they were a civilization, and they have a way of being internally. The Japanese, the Koreans, all the other Asian people, in that, even India, right? All those people over there, they all gravitated to China as the big dog and kind of sort of embraced their way of commerce. And then China just was like, I just can't really, like, explain it. I've been studying it. I got to go back and study it some more. But I do draw the parallels as to every time they want to knock our community down, they flood us with drugs. That's what they did during the COINTELPRO thing, and that's what they did with the crack epidemic. And that's what, so they're getting hit hard now with this opioid thing, dying. But I think some of our people are getting hit with it too. But now would be our time to strike because, as the brother Chris just said, they're so greedy, they don't know when to stop. That's their makeup. They don't know when to stop. This would be our best time to organize and actually pull something together when the whole country is at odds with itself, or at least when they're at odds with themselves. So I'm sorry I jumped in on your comment, but it was just something that you were mentioning, China, and I had studied that recently.
Right. But again, there's a couple of questions I want to ask. The people that even have money, and I know I've had a lot of conversations, and they say, don't talk to the millionaires, don't talk to the black millionaires, so on and so forth, that have money. Mm-hmm. My question would be to them, just as we're having conversations, if you have $1 billion, and I'm talking to you, Lou, right now, if you have $1 billion, how could you go to sleep every night knowing that there are black kids and black people struggling? What percent of that money would you help your community? And I'm just using you as one. I didn't say 10 black billionaires. I said you as a billionaire. And the question is, why don't we do these things? I've used an exercise, for example. If you were to take Oprah, Jay-Z, Michael Jordan, Magic, and say they move in your neighborhood. Just say they buy property. One buys it north, one buys it east, one buys it west, one buys it south. Now, the money that they make, say, for example, the average house in the United States costs $300,000, and I'm just using a number. With the money that they make, I would say it's pretty safe to say that they could buy at least 20 homes free and clear at $300,000. So if Michael Jordan Oprah Winfrey, Jay-Z, and again, Magic Johnson, it was known that they have homes in your neighborhood. How much did your real estate go up now?
Right.
So now they didn't even give you a dollar. They just bought homes in those neighborhoods, and now everybody's real estate goes up. Because I just used the four. There's a lot more that are doing well. You could take any of the football players. The fact that we don't think like this, because we think European. See, our thing is we always want to be accepted. And the things that all of the callers prior mentioned, they took that from us. What you're doing right now is what we're doing is redefining who we are and then moving forward with this cultural collectivity. So you start to see these questions that you ask, you say, man, how many years is it going to take for us to start being like the Asians? How many years is it going to be before we're like the Jews? It doesn't make a difference how many years it's going to take. The point is we have to gain momentum and continue this journey. We don't have a choice. Or just like I said, 2065, I really hate to see what it's going to be like for us. But we are going to change it. You know, I believe in it. Just like that other brother that mentioned that had the bus service line. There's so many of us that are doing well in our profession that there's no way that we can't be successful. And the last thing I want to leave you with, when you find all of us that are on the call, every last one of us that are on this call excel in our respective profession. And what I find a lot of times is that when we find a leader such as yourself, and I've done well, other people have done well, we struggle with yielding to the concept and the movement. That's where we kind of struggle. We want to change. We want to put our little idea. We want to put our spin on it rather than saying, let's get going. But we are going in that right direction, and this was a very good topic, so I want to praise you on that too as well. That's all I got.
Thank you, Brother Leonard. We got Sister Rhonda. Sister?
No, I digress because there's something in the air tonight, and I'm not going to. It's 10:22, and I want everybody
sister,
that
speak your piece.
No, we were talking about the Chinese people and
right.
How their work that because they came from us. They know they came from us. They know that the Sans people look exactly like us, except for they got chinky eyes. They know that. Some of the Chinese people have admitted that. And I'd just like to say to the other brother, I hear him, the one that said he wasn't in a branch, some sort of branch of service, and he's been all over the world. I hear him. I hear his emotion, and I hear how he's feeling like they're not going to give us nothing. And I'd just like to say to him, don't look for anybody to give you nothing. Just go get it. Just go get it. And as he was expressing that, it hurt me in some way because I felt exactly what he's saying. Every time, we don't have to look for these people to give us anything. We know they're not. So we just need to throw that off the table and go get it.
Right. Okay. The brother is in the queue right behind you. So hold on. Okay. Brother Greg. Hello, brother? Hello? Okay, I don't know. It's because.
Wait a minute. Can you hear me?
Yep, there we go.
Can you hear me?
Look.
Yep. I'm just loving this phone call. I you know, and y'all got to excuse me after a while because I can't take much more of this. You know, this is wonderful. It's wonderful. Really, it is wonderful. There are some folks on this phone call that understand. You know, no, I'm not looking for nobody, y'all. I ain't looking for nobody but us. You know what I'm saying? We don't need nobody but us. Look, I'm a I'm a Philadelphia
fan. I hear you beating your chest. You over there beating your chest?
No, look, I'm a Philly fan. You know, I'm a Philly football fan. And they said, we don't need nobody but us. That's all we need. That's all we need, okay? And we need that desperately, seriously.
Right.
And
right.
there's a whole bunch of stuff they didn't threw in the game that kept us off. But it don't have us all off, though. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't have us all off. And we really shouldn't be looking for nothing. What we should be doing is waiting. What we should be waiting is for people to join this call, this kind of call, this kind of conversation, this kind of that they, you know, 400 years, they didn't put all the stuff in the game. And you know what? We don't have to put as much energy in the game as they do, as they did. Okay? We don't. All we have to do is learn a few things, like trust, number one. You know, trust, they broke us down, bro. They even broke our ancestors and everything. They broke that trust thing down. But it doesn't affect me. You understand what I'm saying? I am 65 years old. I love my people more than I ever did when I was 55 or when I was 45. I love my people. I love my people. All right, and I know that for us to survive, we're going to have to learn how to trust each other. You know? We're going to have to learn to trust them.
I'll just tell you really what it is. I mean, it's like Sister Rhonda said earlier. Our folks, we know how our people are, though, right? So let's just not act like we don't know. Let's use the information. Let's use the fact that we have. If we're able to show them and they're able to see it and touch it and believe it, then they will come on board because that's what they're looking for, right? Right. So one of the mandates that I have for this organization is to be, if you watch the blueprint, to be the trusted organization to do what it's supposed to do for the black community. Because we have people who are doing they got their own agendas, they get a few dollars, and then next thing you know, they're off the job. The way that I agonize over presenting this thing, the way that I agonize over trying to make sure that it can't be pulled away from the community, right?
But
with the structure. Hold up.
I heard a couple, one young lady and one young man already say about you. Okay, they wouldn't even be in the call if it wasn't for you. Okay, and what they believe in you. Okay, so what I'm saying, come on, bro, come on.
That's cool. That's cool to be the nucleus. But what happens is, in order to gain the momentum and the critical mass that we need, it's going to need bigger. We're going to need more, right? Because there will be people who will say, yeah, I know, we need to do, but they won't do. See, because I have that data too, right? So, I mean, when I tell you literally tens of thousands of people have come through this call within this past year, tens of thousands. Have come through this call. We only had, 444. We had a goal of 2,000 founding members. We, at one whole collective time, we had 444 out of the tens of thousands of brothers and sisters. Maybe twice or throughout the whole time, maybe we had the tempers were a little high, the energy, maybe turned a little negative out of all the calls. We had these calls every single week. Except for Thanksgiving last year. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm telling you is, it's one thing for people to say, it's one thing for people to be like, yeah, but then what they will actually do will be something different. And it's the hesitancy because people are worried about, the little bits of money. I tell them, listen, I'm here every week. I'm here. You can call me if you reach out. I think you have my personal number. I try to do anything that I feel like from a business perspective is, hey, listen, you can get your money
brother
back. Hold on, brother. Let me explain something to you.
All right.
So with all of those things, with us having these calls. There are people who are, these calls haven't, they, you know, they don't come on for months. They come back. They're like, oh, wow, you know, I didn't even read the email. I just was calling to see you guys are here. Even still with that, that is not enough for the trust. They have to see the physical embodiment of what it is. The organization, what we're trying to do. Go ahead.
No, I understand you. No, brother, I understand you. But here's what I'm trying to say, brother. There's nothing more you can do, bro. Listen, there's nothing more you can do than what you are doing. No, really.
I can do a lot more.
I ain't going for it. You can talk all that crap you want. But
I'm telling you. I'm telling you I can.
You can take the horse to the water. You can take the horse to the water, but you can't make him think. Okay, you cannot make them think, all right? Take the horse through the water, but you can't make them drink, but you can't make them think. That's what I'm trying to say. So what you can only do what you can do, okay? We can only do what we can do. And let me tell you something. I can't think of the thing, you know, because God will sort them out or whatever, what we use in the war, you know, kill everybody and sort them and let God sort them out or whatever. You can put everybody in there, in the mix, but you can't sort them out, bro. It'll all come to fruition. Trust me.
I don't subscribe to that ideology, bro. I know what you're saying. You're saying, hey, you can only do these calls, this process is only to get the 2,000 founding members. This has to be the rough patch, right? For me, it serves multiple purposes. It lets me find out the things that I don't know, right? Because if you go back to some of the earlier calls, I would be like, hey, listen, I don't know how to do everything. I did what I can do. I'm trying to, you know, we're figuring this thing out as we go along. I've learned a lot in the process, and I'm sure there's a whole lot more to go. But what this thing actually is supposed to be, what it's actually going to be, it is going to be awesome. It's going to be, bro, listen, it's going to be easy for black folks to freaking do something. Like I talk with Sister Shauna. The people that I pay attention to, the people that I'm focusing on, I'm looking at like Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk. Like these are people, they don't see no limitations in the world. Amazon, this dude just, I had Amazon stock years ago, like in 2002 or something like that, 2003. That dude came on the call and was like, if you are an investor in this thing, listen, you're either going to be in it for the long haul or you might as well get out right now because there will be no profit. Everything is going to be reinvested into this company. We're going to grow this thing until we basically have our fingers in everything. I own the stock. I was on the investor call. I got out of the stock. I was like, this guy's crazy. Look at what they're doing right now. People, you know, in business, everybody's like, oh, let's compete with such and such. Nobody wants to compete with Amazon. People are yielding to Amazon. Even Walmart is like neck and neck. Right. So what I'm saying is I actually seen this guy. He had a very unique plan. He had a very unconventional way that he was going to do. He was like, I'm going to be, he said, the problem is people on the internet don't trust. They don't trust putting their credit card in. They don't trust that they're going to get their stuff. They don't do whatever. So I have to overcome the hurdle of trust. Huh?
Mm-hmm. I can't blame you sometimes.
Right. No, right. But if you buy something from Amazon, it doesn't, you know what you can do with Amazon? You can get the stuff and be like, I didn't get it. Oh, okay, no problem. We're going to send you another one.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it. Right. Amazon will give Amazon total. Mm-hmm. They've conquered that hurdle. They've conquered that hurdle. Mm-hmm. I studied that. Mm-hmm. The thing that I realized about, so the plan for this organization, for people saying, like, how are we going to get to the community resource centers? How are we going to do this? Mm-hmm. Our number one thing is spending money. That is what we do. Right? The shopping portal that we are going to create, all it's going to do is it's going to allow people to continue doing what they're doing, and then we're going to be like, hey, listen, when you're on your way going shopping or when you're on your way doing this, hey, check for some coupons or whatever it is, or hey, do what you're going to do, and it's still going to contribute, you know, it's still going to benefit the black community. It's still going to benefit the organization. Nobody has to, people don't need to have a black power fist. People don't even need to know who the Black Panthers, Martin Luther King. They don't need to know none of that. All they have to do is be like, oh, I want to support you. All right, cool. That's an easy sell. That's an easy sell. We just got to get there.
That's leadership.
Right, exactly. Right. It's cool. Well, it's called, well, what these people want to do, it's called slacktivism. So they want to symbolically, represent or stand for the community. They don't want to do any of the hard work. I know that. I have the data. We have hundreds of, I mean, the amount of traffic we have coming to the website every day is crazy. We don't have a lot of people on this call right now. I've had people calling me all during the week. We're having, you know, nice, engaging conversations. Maybe one person became a member that I spoke with. One, out of having this whole long conversation, listening to you and every dream that you want to have in your personal life and everything else, and sitting down explaining in painstaking detail what this organization is about. What most people come to this organization is because they hear, okay, this is a black group that's talking about economics, must mean a black business, must mean they're going to help me build some wealth. That, I'm telling you, I hear those keywords all the time, and I'm like, you don't even understand what it takes to do that. I can't magically help you build wealth. You have that's your business, that's your business acumen, that's your financial, you know, that's your financial literacy, your money management, your commitment to yourself, your family, to your financial plan, like all of these things. When I start explaining the, you know, what it really takes, it's like they don't want to hear that. They want to hear the easy way.
Right.
No. And I know that.
I'm gonna say one other thing. Because something that I've been, you know, reading, and that's on my spirit right now. See, it's not about – see, the average one of us, my people, can't understand what building wealth is about. Okay, so what you have to do, or what I think – I mean, I don't know what you have to do. I should take that word back, what you have to do. What I think you should do is start concentrating on what people need. Okay, people need a job. Okay, now here's what I'm saying. People go to Amazon and all them big names that you offer real quick to get a job. Okay, no, what we need to do is to create our own jobs. Okay, we need to create businesses that we can employ our own people. Okay, we you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like starting from the bottom. Okay, you know, I hate to really say that, but our people need to really start from the bottom. You know, we need to not stop going to these people looking for a job 9 to 5. This and that. We need leaders to create jobs for our own people. Okay, because it's about education. We need to educate our young people, man. You know, that's the only thing that's going to change this thing. Is when we start educating our own young people and stop allowing them to go to schools that teach them things that they want them to learn, okay, for them. You know, we need to teach our own children, okay? That's, you know, I ain't even going to be alive when all this stuff might come to fruition, but I do know and I do really feel one thing passionately, that it's going to happen, okay? You cannot keep your foot on a people's neck for so long before they raise up, okay? And they know that. They know that. Come on. And they stay up all night long trying to figure out the next step. When we go to sleep, okay, we need to wake up. And our people need to wake up. And you know, like I said, brother, you on it, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm concerned, you on it. And, you know, I'm going to up my little silver to gold and to platinum. You know what I'm saying? That's where I'm looking to go. And it's okay with me if it don't pan out. It's okay with me because it ain't no real money. Okay? You ain't talking about no real money for this organization, bro. Start talking about $100 for a silver, $500 for a gold.
Right. Then yeah, gonna, I know.
Then you're going to really see the ship stop. in the middle of the water. You understand what I'm saying? Because our people have to get ready, man. And that's what we have to do. We have to ready our people, and it's going to have to start with our children, man. You know, this is a generational thing. It's a generational thing that we have to start with, okay? And you have some people on this call and some people on your past calls, man. I'm loving them. They understand. They understand. So you have to sort it out. You know, and I'm with you, bro. I'm with you. And that's all I got to say.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you so much. Okay. Sister Mai. And then Brother Chris, jump back in the queue, brother, so we can you can finish saying what you were saying, brother. Sister.
Hi. So, you know, I'm in and out with my reception, so I missed what I'm sure were excellent, really good comments. But a couple that I did hear before I dropped, I wanted to sort of piggyback on, were, well, first of all, the last caller, I totally agree that we need to create jobs and we need to teach and educate our children. And what I want to add to that is, which he alluded to, but to state it plainly, they are never going to educate us how to own their companies or how to really run that job or how to start your own company. We'll never get that type of education. They're only going to teach you what it takes to continue to make them and their family wealthy. And we're not, even in the schools, we're only going to learn so much. We're only going to learn enough to keep ourselves in debt and employed, you know, working for them, but never to get rich, never make enough money even on a job to basically you're going to be dependent on that job all the time, whereas we do need to teach our children how to create wealth, which starts with creating our, well, first of all, which starts with investing, I believe, investing in a lot of ways, investing in education, investing in vehicles that will allow you to increase your money without you actually working for it physically. Because we really can't, we don't have enough hours in a day and enough energy to really work towards wealth physically off of our own back. Our minds, however, are limitless, and the more we can create, the wealthier we can become. The people who make the most money, they say, solve the most problems. So we've learned how to make a way out of no way, as they say, and we are like the mothers of invention or whatever, but we haven't learned how to capitalize on those inventions through patents and trademarks and protections and things that, you know, we create things and we just give it away and other people make money off of it. That's the type of education we need to be teaching our own children, because no, they're not teaching us that because they don't want us to get wealthy. Secondly, there's the passionate guy who was talking about his in experience with other cultures and about our backgrounds and what we, you asked the question, what is it that they don't see in us, or that they see in us but we don't see in ourselves? I think it's been a real creative way that I don't know where that feedback is coming from, but it's getting worse. Can you hear it?
No, I didn't. I heard something, but.
Okay.
That is the big question. I want to get back to that because I'm curious. I am really curious. What is it that others think they see in us that we don't see in ourselves? Like, what's the big
secret?
What's going on?
I believe that they see resilience. They see strength. They see power. Well, power and strength is very similar. They see that we don't break easily. We bend, but we don't break. And not everybody can do that. We are the least people that are on these, you know, psych drugs, the least in terms of as a culture, you know, in general. We are the ones that kill people the least in terms of, I mean, that we have our gangs and, you know, the black-on-black crime type of thing where the kids are just being idiots and killing each other. But even then, it's like they feel like they have a reason. But you have other cultures, especially the white people, that just kill up anybody and everybody for no reason. Like, they're just crazy. And whereas we have had so much oppression and so many reasons, and obviously including slavery for so many years, to really be the ones that go postal, you know, and that need drugs to keep our sanity, but we don't. Like, we have that innate ability to just to overcome no matter what. We have been through, and there's like no other race. We're physically stronger, and built for resilience, like someone was talking about, you know, in terms of athletic. But also that's why we were the slaves for as long as we were, because no one else physically could even do that type of work under those type of circumstances like we did. So we're survivors. We are just super strong mentally, physically, spiritually, in every way, and no, you know, over every other race. And because I think it's our way of life, because it is us, because we, it's just, it is what it is. We have the mentality, we're kind of like born into the struggle, and we struggle like all of our life as a people, as a collective. It's all we know, it's what we do. We can do it. You know what I mean? Like, we don't see it as being special. Whereas other people, they might be born with a silver spoon. They lose it. They kill themselves. They lose their life. They go crazy. They don't know how to be without. But we're born into it. So it doesn't fail. We can still laugh and do crazy things. You know what I mean? And have fun and kick it or whatever. I was poor, grew up poor, didn't even know I was poor because everybody around me was in the same boat. And that was my world at that time. I didn't see much outside of that. So I didn't even realize that I lived in a ghetto. I didn't know what a ghetto was until I got out of it. You know what I mean? So it's like we just don't see anything special about what we do naturally or what we are, you know, gifted and inherited, that's inherent in us. And we have the capacity to love like no other. I think that is a major thing. But the funny thing is we love everybody but ourselves. We, like, really have huge hearts and the capacity to love anybody, take in anybody's kids, love any race. And that is, like, inherent, because I think we are the mothers of all, you know, creation, mothers of all the earth or whatever. That's why they used to take all the nannies and the slaves used to breastfeed, take care of the white people's kids, you know. But we find stray kids or whatever. We can take in anybody's kids and anybody's, any race, as long as you don't personally hurt us or do anything wrong to us, and even sometimes when you do. We still have that capacity to love, to forgive, and nobody that I have not seen any other race, and I've been around a lot of them and said to them too, and I've been to a lot of countries, and nobody else has that. I think people genuinely, that's something to seriously envy. If we could learn how to love ourselves, to feel like we are worthy and we get to see our own worth, if the world does need to fear us, because we would be on top. But the funny thing is, if we were on top, we still would never turn around and treat them the way they've treated us. We wouldn't repay them, but that's what they're afraid of, because they know what they deserve, but we wouldn't even give it to them, because we're just big-hearted, loving people. To fall to our own demise. And that's all I got.
All right, thank you, sister. All right, Brother Chris.
One question.
Yeah, in terms of us loving each other, man, they worked real, real, real hard on taking that away from us, because I think that's always been the key to our excellence. It's probably always been the key to our success, our empire, whatever that used to look like. And, you know, I think it's the biggest and possibly the only missing piece of the puzzle. Is our own self-love, the love for one another. Because you take that, you put that back into the mix, everything else falls back into place. And I was thinking of what that young lady was just saying about, you know, chiming in again about the strength of our physicality, our mentalness, our mental acumen, our spirituality. And I think about our culture, right? Which is grounded in nothing but what we bring to the table, because we were cut off from our history. Now, imagine this. What does this say about us as a people? We're cut off from our history and driven, and the gap is so wide that we forget where we came from. So we create our own kind of subculture here in the Americas.
But even though we've done that, being disconnected from Africa, what we've created just being here, strangers in a strange land, so to speak, has been so powerful that the whole world adopted it. Now, I don't, and it's always been like that. I don't care if it's jazz. I don't care if it's, like, I can't turn on the radio now. And like I said again, you know, we're in this vein, we're allowed to excel in the arts, right? So we can look at that as a prime example. But I am not afraid to take that and stretch it across everything we could be and everything that we actually are inside. You know, you got people in Korea now having multi-million-dollar hip-hop contests and things like that. I can't remember the last time I turned on the radio and heard somebody singing, and they didn't sound black. Like, we've pushed the culture. Nobody used to do runs before us. No, you know, even things like twerking, right? Like, as ghetto or as base as some people may think that is, when black people were twerking, quote unquote, like about like 15 years ago, from what I remember, 15, 20 years ago, when I started seeing it, everybody crapped on it and was like, these are animals and blah, 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 blah. Look at them. But that's only until they could wrap their minds around it. Once they could wrap their minds around it, now you type twerking in a YouTube search, I dare you to go 20 minutes before you even find anybody black twerking. It's a cultural phenomenon, and now they're you know, now Allison has got a class in Hell's Kitchen teaching Caitlin and Ashley how to twerk at like $200 an hour. But that's only because we, you know, they criticized it until they could wrap their minds around it. You know, I've been to Europe. I've been to Eastern Europe. I've been to the different places, the Caribbean and everything. I run into white people all the time with no black people around, their pants sagging. Where'd they get that from?
What are they doing?
You know, they'll criticize you for it, but you know the larger point that I'm making is that.
Oh, you said they're doing what? They're twerking? You said?
No. I said I'll be somewhere, maybe like in Europe or something, and see white people with no black people around, but these white people have their pants sagging.
Oh, okay.
Sagging halfway down their butt. Where do they get that from? Now, however we feel about pants sagging, whether you love it or you hate it, the fact of the matter is they respond to it. Even if at first they'll criticize it until they can wrap their minds around it or feel brave enough to do it themselves. And so my larger point is this. It's not really just about how we dress. Our culture is about how we express ourselves, how we break the rules, or we ignore the rules. We don't sing like everybody else. We create our own way of singing, our own way of dancing, our own way of dressing. Even if we're disconnected from our historical culture, what comes out of us, the world responds to. Even if they start off hating it, it's only that hate only comes from the fact that they misunderstand it and wish probably that they had done it first. Because if you give them 7 years, they will be commercializing it, and they will put themselves on top as having done it, and they will market it and distribute it all over the world, package it, commercialize it. But it came from that core, and you know that plus some of the other examples that I've brought up and other people on this call has got to mean that you know there's something mighty powerful inside of us that the world responds to. They love to hate us and hate that they love us.
Nice.
The resource that I was going to talk about was I was listening to this black talk show, and they had a couple brothers on. They were guests. They were starting this small business. And it's really on the ground floor right now. But what they were doing is they were software developers. it's two brothers, I think, working together. And they created these algorithms that were similar to what you would see with Acorns. I don't know if you're familiar with that app. Real quick,
yeah.
It's just, you know, it pulls your chain, it rounds your purchases up, and it gathers that change. So, you know, they were trying to do something with that where they could, you know, sign people up and get, like you were talking about, that critical mass where they can round people's changes up and stuff like that, and using technology to try to build, you know, a stronger infrastructure. You know, something like that is easier for a lot of people to, like, wrap their minds around, just a little nibble here and there that, you know, adds up if you're able to get, you know, volume, if you're able to get volume. So I wanted to know if you had considered that, because they're also consultants where they part of their business is setting up those things for other entities as, like, fundraisers and stuff like that, and using some of their proprietary software to harness that for different causes.
I thought about you.
I'm getting feedback from your earpiece.
Oh.
Hello?
Okay, you can mute me. I'll listen to the answer. That's
okay.
All.
Okay.
If you want to know the actual app, I can tell you later.
Okay. So no, I didn't look to develop that kind of app. There was a brother who contacted me some months ago, and he was talking about using something like that. I was actually trying to figure out how we could do it with a debit card, how we could actually get a card. But then I started thinking about it, like, well, you know what, don't want to get too integrated into the monetary system or to their system like that, just in case they decide to shut something down. So I'll be honest with you, no, I didn't even begin exploring that. I was, you know, trying to focus on, you know, the plan that we have before us.
You did.
All right.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no problem. No problem.
All right, cool. But you can definitely forward it, though. I would love to check it out.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, great. All right. And then we got Brother Leon.
Yeah, Brother Lou, Brother Leon here again. Hey, I was listening, and what I was getting was that I was hearing emotions, and going back to that question that was mentioned earlier tonight about what do they know about us? What's the secret? Okay, and I kind of agree with some of the conversation we had. Well, when you look at it, emotions, and we look at emotion, is that the secret to be, they recognize that we are, you know, a people of love. We can love. Second thing is what we have the ability to love. The third thing is what we can give love. And not with those attributes, okay, that's a secret they know about us. Okay, and then now they can use us, okay? Because why? We're going to love them, their product, before we love our own product. That could be taught to us through slavery and things of that nature, but the bottom line is that's something that we can contribute toward to answer that question, what's the secret they know about us, okay? And is that we have that these attributes where we can love, we have the ability to love, we can give love, and in doing that, we're not putting ourselves first. And that could be a secret that they know, and they use it, and they capitalize on us, because what we make a trade of so much a year, and we only control what our money for a couple of hours. So these are principles that could be used against us, right? Because we being emotional people. So I thought about that when we were in the conversation.
Okay, cool. So you're saying that they are able to. So the biggest secret they understand about us is that we're mostly emotional, we're emotionally driven, and so they're exploiting those emotions for commerce, for
yeah,
profit.
For profit, because like, it's something that we're not using. It's being used against us instead of for us, okay? And then that once you have emotionally drained a person, okay, now what happens is that the person, they don't accomplish stuff because they depression is what you're just not being able to do what you can do. because you wouldn't if I said you didn't do or said it happened to you. That's what I'm looking at from that point.
Excellent, brother. All right, cool. Brother Leon, that was. Do you have anything else you want to add in summary?
That was it. I just cannot. I did kind of. This just kind of going a little bit off the subject, but right now, considering where we are, and where we're going, and right now, okay, in creating something like what we're doing is that I'm looking at how we can bring the people who have money in and the people who don't. We're bringing everybody together to one point. Okay, is by having by recognizing that. Okay, like say again. Okay, what is our culture? See, what is our culture right now? And so as we change, as we have a mechanism, which is the Black Wallet Matter, it's a mechanism that can change our culture. We first recognize that our culture is having issues. All right. So what we're doing and say, and what is affected that, because we can't change people, but we can change our culture. What is our culture? That's the way we think about each other, the way we treat each other. So by recognizing that we can we have a disruptive concept of our culture, I'm going to disrupt the way we think, way we do, way we react to each other. That concept right there puts in a position where we can develop a unit, a process, a product that say that's designed to disrupt the way we think about each other, the way we work with each other. And that's something that I'm hearing in the conversation. Every time I hear different positive things, I'm seeing how that could be something that all your people who have money could buy into that unit. And that unit could be something that could be distributed through the research sources, but just, I'm going to buy that unit. If it costs a dollar, I got $10,000, buy $10,000. Well, that unit's going to do so much for people, or it's going to do much so much for the resource, our resource centers. But I've been working with that because I can see where we have the idea, we have the passion, okay, but we have to have a product, a vehicle, okay, that can say, express that passion so that people who have can say, you know what, I don't mind putting into that because I can see what's going to come out of it.
That's exactly what we're working on. Sister Shauna and I were looking at, the way to format it. That's why I was, trying to explain to Brother Greg a little bit earlier that, I have a lot of people that calling in and they're like, but how could I do this and how could I do that? Well, one of the things that people was, they're calling in, they're like, I want to build wealth. I want to do this. I want to do that. And they're like, okay, well then here's some information to go start your business. And they're like, I don't want to do that. I want you to kind of like do it for me. I want to invest in this. I want you guys to do all of that. So we're trying to figure out ways to help individuals, also help the organization. Because, I pose this question all the time. People say, all right, we need more black businesses. We need more black businesses. I personally feel we don't need more black businesses unless those businesses also agree to recontribute back to the black communities that support them. Because nobody thinks about that part. Because if we just have a bunch of more, if we have more black businesses and the black businesses become successful and the people make the money, they're going to leave those neighborhoods. They're going to take the money out of the neighborhoods because there's really no other black businesses and there's no system or way for them to give back to the community in an organized and a structured way and a way for them to see the results of their contribution. So that's one of the goals, that's one of the goals that this organization is focused on. So thank you, Brother Leon, so much for weighing in. It is 11 o'clock. We are going to shut this one down. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate everyone coming to hang out with us tonight. If you are a guest on this call and you like what you heard, we invite you to become a member and help us build this beautiful system that we're talking about. You can go to blackwalletsmatter.org. You can click the menu button up in the upper right-hand corner, and then there will be a link to become a member. If you cannot become a member or you don't have it in the monthly budget, you can make a one-time contribution to help us reach our financial goals, if that is the case. So I want to thank everyone for coming to hang out with us again, as I said, and good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night.